AI is just going to be so big. How we can use AI to streamline our processes operationally, and like I can see just massive changes coming.
Anthony Wyman, founder of Ignite Online,
a digital marketing guide for business growth
and an expert in the field of AI.
There was a story, a woman got a call from someone who sounded exactly like their son, saying that they're in trouble, asked for money or something, and it sounded exactly like their voice. And you can do that now. You can copy someone's voice. With social media, they know where you work, they can find your number, then they can find you on Instagram if it's open, find your kids' names.
I'm not optimistic about AI going forward. Don't see that great for my kids, because I see it taking away from the human experience.
Who do you trust more to make ethical decisions, AI or humans?
I would probably go with AI, because humans have so many.
If you're interested in growing wealth through townhouse development, check out the Little Fish Network. You get coaching, expert access, and community support. It's essentially everything you need to win at property and development. Welcome back to Australia's number one podcast about the Little Fish. We speak to the big fish about town each and every week. Please like, share, subscribe, follow. As everyone knows, we're donating $1 to every follow and subscribe that we get for our amazing charity EB, Epidemolis Bullosa.
Is that pretty good, Bryce?
Out of 10.
I think that's probably your best effort to date.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Out of 10?
Yeah. Well, it's 3.
Okay. Yeah. It's a bit over-exaggerated, but it's all right.
When you're at the bottom, there's only one way to go, boys. But yeah, please, you know, we're donating on your behalf. Just smash that subscribe and follow button. It's pretty easy. And it's the worst disease you've never heard of. It's a skin condition. In kids, our most vulnerable, so we need to shed a light on it, raise some awareness, raise some funds, and get behind it. So exciting.
Let's do it.
All right. We've got Ant with us today, our Little Fish and Friends episode, number 6.
Is it number 6?
Yeah, it's got legs, the old Little Fish and Friends. But a great episode that we get to dive in with one of our friends, super relatable, hear the ups and downs and the challenges that you've had along the way. Ant, thanks for coming in, mate.
Thanks, guys. Great to be here. Been listening to the podcast for a while. Love it.
Long time listener, first time guest.
Or watcher.
That was a lead balloon. mate, thanks for coming on. You and Benny have been close mates for a long time. You know, I know Benny and you wax business ideas, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, which is sort of super cool. Love to hear where, you know, Ignite Online, your business, where it started from.
Yeah, great. I guess before we jump into it, I don't know, how long ago was it that we met each other? It'd be like 20 plus years ago.
Yeah, I think it was maybe 2004 or something.
Yeah. But like all that time, you always just had such a business mindset. Like quick story before we jump into that. Benny was one of the first people to like push me towards advertising when I ran this website that was getting quite a bit of traffic. He's like, mate, you got to advertise, get some ads on there. And I ended up getting a deal because of that. But like, just a born and bred, like true entrepreneur and always has been. So
very much the opportunist.
Oh man, yeah. I do remember when we first met. I was blown away, man. I'll tell you why, right? So this is 20 odd years ago. He had a website, melbournegraffiti.com, right? And it used a lot of traffic. And correct me if I'm wrong, is that archived in the state library these days?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so yep. I know what's going on. So this website has historical value, but that's how old it is. But I remember when you started it, like websites were a big thing back then. And I remember thinking, yeah, because I always had that inside me, but I didn't have a website. I was on the sidelines looking. And yeah, I remember being blown away going, look, he's actually doing it. You know what I mean? And to this day, you're still in web design, or you know, web development, and even now, I know you're diving into the AI and stuff. But it's crazy how fast that's gone. But looking back, when we met, because that was on the streets of London, do you remember?
Yeah,
that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
we're just walking along the sidewalk. Someone introduced us.
Yeah,
and then I was like, "What are you doing? Oh, you should be doing this." Yeah, I remember. Crazy story.
Yeah, no, it's so good. Yeah, but like always kept in touch, and love it. Like I don't know about you guys, but it's energizing just talking to him, isn't it? The passion.
The wife would say exhausting. Anyway,
yeah, he's definitely energetic. So take us back to that website, because it sounds like you were part of the pioneering days.
Yeah, that's right.
What was the process of registering it? What was the idea of trying to get activity and interest and traffic to it?
Yep. So I guess that particular website I just kind of fell into just through a hobby of mine. So graffiti was a bit of a hobby that I spent a lot of my 20s experimenting with and traveled the world and had a lot of fun with that. Probably why business took a bit of a backseat until 30s. And but I guess that's another story. But yeah, I guess that's where I started. I always had a background in design and digital as well. So always in front of a computer, pulling computers apart, rebuilding them, but also loved design and art and things like that. So when websites came along and they were quite obviously like this tech product that was visual, straight away I was just really drawn to them, and I was like, now I've got to figure out how to build these things. And so that was probably the first website that I built, I think, for that passion of mine at the time, which evolved. But then after that, I, you know, friends, parents and things like that were like, what are these website things that, you know, I'm seeing in the news? Like, do you know anyone that does these? And it's like, oh yeah, my mate Anthony, like, he's playing around with them. So they were then my first customers. Actually, I think my first customer was my mum and dad, who run their own business. So I did their website, and then I did my best mate's dad's website. And
so what date are we talking here with this story?
2001 or so, two, three, somewhere around there. Yep. So yeah, long time ago, and the tech's changed a lot since then. So kind of got to be like reinventing quite a bit along that journey. But yeah, that being said, I guess there's a few key milestones. When mobile phones came out, then everyone needed a mobile responsive website. You know, Flash being discontinued, Adobe Flash was a way to bring movement and animations.
Your original Ignite website.
It was, yeah, it was. Yeah.
Remember, man, that was 20 years ago.
Yeah. Steve Jobs killed Flash in the end. He was like, no, this is using up all the computer resources. So he put an end to that. But yeah, the big one at the moment now is AI. Like, I can see just massive changes coming, the biggest yet over all that time in digital, like 20 plus years. AI is just going to be so big for our industry. So that's kind of why I've really been drawn to that now as well. So yeah, still love websites and web design, but how we can use AI to streamline our processes operationally and get better results for clients. And so yeah,
Website building, is that an AI capability?
It is at the moment, but it's not great. But you can see quite clearly that it's going to get really good really quickly. I would never have guessed that AI could generate images and video at the quality that it can
already.
Yeah, and it feels like it only just happened. Like, that's, which, you know, it's been going for a little while, but not that long. It's like now it's like there's new things happening every week with AI, and it's just getting exponentially better. So I can definitely see that AI will be able to generate amazing websites really, really soon. Maybe not the more complex websites that need API integrations and need to solve slightly bigger problems, which is a lot of the websites that we do as well. So yeah, maybe we've got a little bit more life before AI takes our jobs. But no, it's at the moment it's just an amazing tool to use to help us do better work.
Can I ask, Ant, because you'll remember this, there was a time when I was building websites as well, and we were both building websites, and I think I was telling the boys for a bit of a laugh before you came. I said there was a time there where, you know, the boys would go, oh, I need a website, you know, there'd be a plumber mate, one of our mates would need a website, and they'd go, someone would say, oh, go to Ant, and then someone would go, no, don't go to Ant, you won't be able to afford him, go to Benny, right? So
that's right, that was short-lived.
No, yes. Definitely true story, right? Yeah. So my question is, and because I always sat on the outline and we used to share information, talk about SEO and AdWords and all that stuff, and one of the biggest challenges I had back then was being able to charge enough for a website. I think we had conversations about this early on. You used to say it is difficult because you're not really selling them anything tangible that they could hold, especially in those earlier days. So my question is, you started with your mum and your dad, and then you went into your friends and family, but I know that you quickly got off the friends and family bandwagon, which was pivotal to you being able to break out and actually create a business, right? So my biggest challenge was I was always just doing it from friends and family and people I knew, and I wasn't really able to break it out. How did you do that? And you had to weather a bit, I kind of remember, right? You had to weather a bit of a storm, whether that be friends or family, because you were the guy that did the websites, but it got to a point where it was like, I know, but I'm trying to run a business here. I can't do your plumbing website because I'm doing this. And they might be like, oh, why isn't he helping me? Yep. You know what I mean? So how did you navigate that? And what was the catalyst that made you figure that part out where you could charge enough? You knew what you were worth and you could get people to buy into it.
Yep. Actually, you just made me think about a real pivotal moment, and because I'd always worked from home doing this, and the time came where I got an offer to, I think it was around about the GFC kind of time, where some of the ad agencies around town had some empty desks and things like that, and one in particular, through a friend of a friend, invited me in to pay rent on one of the desks, and I kind of ummed and ahed about it at the time. I was, yeah, a little bit younger, and I was like, oh, you know, but that's a little bit of money that I'm not paying now working from home. It really wasn't much at all. So I was like, oh, should I stay working at home for free or go here? And in hindsight, it should have been, and it was a no-brainer. Like, I should have gone straight there, and I did in the end. As it turned out, that advertising agency didn't have a digital department because it was still kind of early days. Nowadays, you know, they would easily, all of them do, but at that time they didn't. So a lot of the work for websites and anything like that just went to the guy in the corner that knows how to build them. So I ended up working on like large global websites, you know, in partnership with this advertising agency, but doing a lot of the work. And that kind of helped me work on really large clients, gave me that experience of like what it takes to build a large website for a global client. And I guess probably did really help me take that next stage. So yeah, that was a big one. And I guess on a similar kind of note, moving, taking, I guess, that same theory and moving into a co-working space was also really great. Like being around other people, like sharing, you know, you've suddenly got a photographer over there that you can use to help you with the website. You kind of end up with this team around you without having to pay their
working spaces as well. Would that be fair?
Yeah, definitely. I think there wasn't too many around Melbourne when I first started doing them, working from them. These days there are a lot. I think, yeah, WeWork's just collapsed, but the one that we're in is amazing, and they were one of the first kind of premium co-working space offerings. We're in the Commons now, so yeah, shout out to the Commons. They're amazing. There's some really great brands in there too, like global brands like PayPal and others, like that might have pilot offices in there, all the way to like solopreneurs, freelancers and things like that. So yeah, if you're a freelancer or maybe got one or two team members, I really can't recommend moving into a co-working space highly enough.
So you don't make that move early days. You're still building websites with me with all your plumbers, mate. With all your plumber mates. Do you know what I mean?
Like, maybe. That was that move. That it gave credibility to maybe get some bigger deals over the line. Yeah. Plus the experience to know that I could deliver on those promises.
Hey, and when did you start, I guess, building the team and hiring people? Because, you know, we speak to a lot of different people. You know, we employ people ourselves, being business owners. People can make things difficult when you bring them into the fold. When did that start, and, you know, what was that like in your early days?
Yep. So I guess the instigator for that was, like we've kind of touched on, maybe for a bit too long in my 20s and even into my 30s, didn't take the business seriously enough, like didn't know what I had right under my nose. And I think maybe one moment was reading this book called The E-Myth, which was maybe a bit of a turning point for me. It just kind of showed like how like fun and beautiful a well-run business can be. And like, yeah, I think that was a real moment. And anyway, I was like, it's just like being under my nose this whole time. Like Ignite is what I need to go all in on. Stop like partying and traveling. And like, you know, I've done that. It's like now business mode. And so that was when I started focusing on the business, and intentionally trying to scale. And in terms of then, I guess then that meant growing the business and working with more contractors, taking on more projects. But then the problem that I found was I was off the tools myself then, like I wasn't designing or developing, but I became like an email pusher where I would get the job, I'd then email the brief to say the designers that I was using, and then they'd do it, and I'd go back and forth on email refining it. send it to the developers and then send it to the client. And I just became this one person sending hundreds of emails per day. And that was being a creative person as well. That was like just really draining and I had no time for anything else. So there was that pain point. And also, I guess acknowledging that I was probably just scared to take that leap of hiring a team and making that commitment.
Fear of failure, would you say? Like,
yeah, I mean, potentially. Yeah, potentially fear of failure for sure. Fear of maybe leadership and having to step up. But then once I decided, no, this is the way forward, hiring that first person was the hardest. Straight away you realize, wow, my time has just freed up so much once you've gone through the training and things like that. And it made it much easier to kind of hire the second and third person from there. So that was, I guess, yeah, how we got into it. But yeah, ultimately that first hire was the hardest, but yeah, don't regret it at all. It was so good. And ultimately it's the scale that gives you freedom. So I do feel like I've got so much more freedom in the business as well these days. I mean, I still work so hard and long hours because I love it, but the freedom is there if I, you know, wanted to take more of it.
Yeah, nice. Do you think you're, you know, working as part of a team, being that leader, does that sort of come naturally to you? You know, what sort of leader are you in the office? Is it one that's, you know, sort of a dictator, or is it like, hey, you know, you
can't see the forest through the trees.
No, that's not it. But yeah, essentially you're working as a team, you know, more of a collaboration than a...
Definitely a dictator. Just
like, that wasn't what I was thinking.
Does anyone ever answer dictator to that?
some people, yeah, we had a fella on a little bit earlier this year, but he said he wasn't much good at it, so he hired someone else to do it for him.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, I just wasn't sure what you're maybe, you know, reflecting on it, you know, what kind of leader are you and does it come naturally to you?
Yeah, I think definitely not a dictator, like do what I say. I think I've always been really collaborative in that I know I definitely don't have all the answers and probably bring everyone on the team along for the journey. So very much asking everyone's opinion, before moving forward, bringing everyone along for the ride, yeah. Which I guess is a benefit with being in a smaller business as well. But yeah, in terms of like leadership style, I guess you'd have to ask the team. But yeah, I mean, that has definitely been the most rewarding part as well. Just building a team, the connections and people that you meet along the way and not only that, the people that, you know, when they move on or something, they kind of tell you how much they learnt on that journey and you can see yourself like where they started and, you know, where they finished and then watch them on their next chapter to something, you know, something else, which, yeah, it's great to follow then the journey of others that have been a part of our early story. So, yeah, like I really enjoy the whole leadership side of things now and building the team. It's super rewarding.
Yeah, nice.
Ant, you're obviously an advocate for AI right now, but if you were to, and you've probably been using it long before ChatGPT came out, right? So part of your lane. But if you were to, maybe if we're having this conversation in 10 years from now, do you think AI is a good thing philosophically for us as humans? Because I know it's good for business, but do you think it's good, it's a positive development?
I think it'll definitely have positives and negatives, like anything. Even if you look at mobile phones and how we're all attached to our mobile phones and the screen time that we have, maybe aimlessly scrolling on TikTok or social media. Yeah, I guess the same thing with that tech. It has really, really big negatives and positives. It'll just be the same with AI. I think it'll have some amazing implications with instant real-time voice translation, allowing people to move, speak, communicate, or something that weren't maybe able to previously. A really great, this is more a business case for us, but being able to generate images of elderly people for an aged care home that we're working with at the moment has actually proved to be good for us, and because it's a real pain point for them getting permission from the people in the home. You know, the family might not want photos.
So this is generating artificial images of that look like real people that you can use on the website.
That's right. Yep. Yep. So, like, this means that for the clients, they don't need to be, and, you know, of course, like, they pass away and then it's like, oh, we're going to have to take so-and-so off the website. So it's they're constantly having to update it. The photos might also not be that good. Like, you know, they're ultimately not in their best, like, stage of life. We get to generated an image of a happy grandma with a
tea. Is that on Midjourney?
Is it? That one was Midjourney. So I'd say Midjourney for the moment is where you would go for a more professional level of output for photography and AI image generation, but ChatGPT allows it now as well. But at the moment, Midjourney still has the edge, and you really can't tell the difference now already.
You can't tell it's an AI image or Bonnie's taken the photo.
No, you can't, and definitely not when it's on a website. You know that compressed. It's amazing. But you totally could say a year ago. So like already, the technology has come so far in just a year. So another few years, it's going to be incredible. But that's just like one business application. In terms of the positives and negatives, like it's definitely going to have some really intense negatives as well. So, I really don't know how school kids are going to use it, but there's going to be, being a school kid in the age of AI is slightly terrifying for me as a parent, because you can like face swap people really easily, so it would be really easy to mock up
things. Source of truth, like people are going to be able to distort the truth, right? Yep. Like, yep. Up until now, if you see something with your eyes, you can go, that happened.
Yeah,
but maybe it gets to the point where you're going, just because I'm seeing it, we need some other kind of level of verification now as well, right?
Yeah,
you can't just assume that it's because I'm looking at Bryce and it's got Bryce's face on it. It's not
Bryce. I mean, you won't be able to. It's already really now, I would say, like, don't believe anything you see or even hear. Like, there was a story, like, and this was a few months ago, but a woman got a call from someone who sounded exactly like their son or child, saying that they're in trouble and like asked for money or something. And it sounded exactly like their voice. And you can do that now. You can copy someone's voice. Yeah. So with social media, depending on how much content you're putting out there in terms of, you know, they know where you work, they can find your number, then they can find you on Instagram if it's open, find your kids' names.
Enough.
Like, there's probably enough there. And if they do things like
this down. I'm
over this. Cut it, Bonnie.
Do things like this, and you can get audio samples. Like, yeah. If anyone out there, don't believe a word that I say over phone or anything anymore. Could be AI.
Well, I think that's an important response that you've got there, Pete, because I think that's the genie's out of the bottle. And I just can't see that technology has been amazing, like even to your point around kids with phones and all those sorts of things. So I'm not optimistic about AI going forward. The genie's out of the bottle, and you have to acknowledge it. And I can see that there's a business case, particularly in your, even myself, ChatGPT. Philosophically, I didn't agree, so therefore I had my head in the sand for about 6 months. And then I thought to myself, I've got to actually. This isn't going away. I need to actually understand it better, and kind of thought that I've moved from, you're not going to lose your job to AI, you're going to lose your job to someone using AI. But then if I allow my mind to wander too far down the road, I don't see that great for my kids, because I see it taking away from the human experience. So it'll get us sitting in our chairs more. We'll, instead of jumping on a plane and going and seeing Paris, we'll just put some goggles on and we'll actually be there, and we'll be able to do it with infinite amount of energy to see whatever we want. So it'll mean that the interaction that we have as humans here doesn't probably need to happen, because we'll just put on goggles. So I see us removing further and further away from the human experience. But then you talk to people with vested interests in AI, they go, nah, you're being overreactive. But you know, the harvester took jobs back in the industrial age, and look, there's still jobs for farmers. Cool. But I'm trying to remain on the right side of optimism around that. But I can't help but if I allow my mind to project too far in the future, I don't like where my mind wanders. And some prominent people, Elon, have tried to warn against what's happening. But if we don't go down that path and we stay here, and within the context of some of the things that you can do, your mind can be blown. And like you say, the applications that you can make, and the optimizations and the efficiencies and the ability to deliver at a faster, more amazing rate is incredible. I'm just wrestling. So for someone who's in that space, who's spending a lot of time in it, I'm always interested in understanding that philosophy, because I need help coming out of the pessimism side of it, because I can see the commercial benefits, but I'm worried about what that means for us as humans.
Trying to teach the old dog a new trick.
I think a company like ChatGPT or one of these larger models might not be the ones that, even though they're going to get infinitely smarter and better, they might not be the ones that you need to worry about, because they do have safeguards in place. But I did see something the other day where essentially now, it wasn't that long ago, we only had ChatGPT 3.5 or whatever it was.
3.5,
But now you can get a better model running locally on your phone or computer, which has no safeguards. So like it will do anything for you. So that already is, that's the scary bit, I think, when you start unleashing AI without any safeguards, because you can, it's really good at things like phishing and things like that. So it could quite easily do things like find your profile online.
So it's making it easier for people to be dodgy.
Yeah, totally. So, and send emails at scale, like hyper-targeted, maybe based on specific things that it knows about you or your company, that maybe like what email platform you use or what accounting software, to like send you some kind of email that's completely tailor-made, and at the moment you can kind of tell what a phishing email is, because it, asks for it, but you won't be able to, it'll be much harder. So that's where it gets a bit scary. But on the positive side, I can't even imagine how many positive instances there are that
medicine. Maybe, there's so many different applications. And I was going to say, if you look at the glass half full, there's going to be opportunities that don't exist today that are going to come on the back of AI, right? Which is going to be things that we can't even imagine are going to happen or where it's going to go. So
But you know how you were saying, like, maybe it's detaching from the human experience or something like that? Did you see that video the other day of, I think it's something that Meta's working on, where they've got, it's almost completely lifelike now, virtual reality.
Lex Friedman and what's his name? Zuckerberg.
Yeah, it was Zucks.
Zucks. Yeah, they did the full interview in the middle. I watched the whole thing, man.
Yeah.
And it was weird, but, because they look like they were there. But yeah, I was going to bring that up. I knew you would have watched that, because what Zuck would say to your point, and probably where you were going, is Zuck saying it's connecting, right? Because you can be on the other side of the world, and like they were, and they were in the same room shooting a podcast. And if we hadn't told you that they were in different rooms, you probably would have been hard to tell.
Yeah, because that's it. Because right now you could all be French or German or something, and I could be sitting in my living room, but visually I'd be seeing the exact same thing, and you'd all be communicating to me in English. So I could be like connecting with more people that
and on the other side of the world. Yeah. And so you can have deeper connections, further away connections and stuff. But that was a fascinating interview.
But I think that it must be amazing, because he spent 2 minutes looking at his skin, and he could see all the little imperfections
in everything.
He was just mind blown.
Well, I'd imagine Zuckerberg would be pro-positive on AI anyway, so there's an incentive there. But
definitely.
And he's trying to figure out. But he's saying the only thing that's missing now is that feeling, right? So they're trying to figure out how you get a feeling as well that goes with the with them being there, with that sense of them being there. It's crazy.
Makes me want to just jump in a caravan and go to Outback Australia somewhere.
Or Torquay.
I don't know. That's getting pretty overrun down there. It is very nice. So all this AI talk, it's getting me a bit scared. And so we spoke on the phone, you know, you said, you know, you've seen a couple of ups and downs in your business journey. You know, you were talking about, it was a bit of a rude awakening around the sort of COVID time, sort of hit you a bit hard. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, so the COVID time, I guess, yeah, I mean, look, like I was saying, like, love being amongst a team. Just prior to COVID, we were just really, really buzzing. We had a great team, great environment. We just moved into a new office that we fitted out on.
I remember that. That
Brunswick
was cool,
Street. Yeah. So, yeah, really, really happy with where things were at. And then COVID hit almost as soon as we were like at capacity and everything was settled, only 6 months into our multi-year lease. And then just trying to figure out how to be a leader during all of that was just crazy. Like, yeah, massive amounts of pressure and uncertainty and bleeding cash as well. You know, you've suddenly got an office that you're not using, that you're heavily invested in. And so, yeah, that was...
We had one of them.
I mean, we're back in a co-working space now. That was probably a lesson that we probably shouldn't have even left, because even had COVID not happened, I underestimated the amount of effort it takes to like build a culture, maintain the place. Like, I ended up being the one having to change the rolls of toilet paper, make sure it was stacked. Like, you know, I outsourced it a little bit, but then you're taking time off your team to do menial tasks like that. Now this is just all taken care of, like everything. Like, I roll up to the co-working space and I can work from like the minute that I get there. Don't have to worry about it. All parties taken care of, all that kind of stuff, building culture. So anyway, that was a sidetrack. But
so did you have to make moves pretty quickly when things got a bit tight?
We hung on for longer than we should have. I kind of like through research saw that pandemics typically last for multi-year, but there was always that element of hope that, oh, maybe it'll all blow over soon. So hung over a little bit longer than we should have. But then coming back to a 30-person office with like a handful of people sitting in the corner was just no vibe at all. So that was why when we decided this is just an uphill battle from here, I can't build a culture and hold the office. So now in a co-working space, that's much easier. But that was really tough. I'm trying to think of other things that were tricky on through COVID. What did we talk about yesterday? Was there one point that you were angling at?
Yeah, no, there was. You went back to your co-working space, and
yeah,
it sounds like your sort of outlook on business and investment and all that sort of stuff sort of changed a bit. You know, it sounded like, you know, you went through a bit of a
searching,
an awakening.
I remember we were at a Bucks around that time, and you were moving into the co-working, and you'd just done your fit out and stuff. And I felt like when we were having our conversations, you were looking for something. You know, is it property? Is it? I think you were talking about the co-working spaces emerging back then, and you were saying maybe I could get one of them and be a part of that. So I guess. I was going to say, like, I envied when you did that office, man, because I do remember that. And we were trying to do our business, and I was thinking it just takes a lot of courage. And I think that's why you started. I think we skipped over the fact that did you build your Ignite website as your uni project, or as part of uni, or straight out of uni, or whatever. That's what you've done the entire time, right?
Yep.
So you've never really had another job. And I was going to say, to your personality, even though that didn't work out, I reckon, like, that's how you got to where you are, by just having a go, by taking a risk. And like Bryce says all the time, by taking action, that one may not have panned out specifically, and there's a lot of it out of your control with COVID. But having the courage to do that is why, I guess, you get to sit here and tell the story. Does that make sense? Even though that particular one didn't work out.
Yep, totally. I guess going down that whole journey... So ultimately after COVID, might have been that year or the year after, obviously everyone was just completely fried. It was kind of a common thing. I think we're all still recovering really with a bit of PTSD from those years. It was all pretty brutal. But Yeah, at the end of one of those years, like a few years back, we ultimately scaled up too quickly, which was probably one of the larger mistakes, because we only started hiring people like 7-ish years ago, and it's always just been grow, scale since then. So we kind of grew to about 15 people or so, and that was probably just around COVID times. And I think overall we were too heavy, or we were too inefficient on delivering projects at that time. But either way, there was a period where a couple of projects got pushed, or they were just going to be next week, and then next week got pushed, and next week got pushed. So you kind of keep allocating resources, but then the work didn't start. And it only took a few pay runs for, you know, what you thought was a good buffer to evaporate. And suddenly it was real, really tight there for 1 year. And so we kind of ended the financial year like only just in profit in one of those years. And it was like all of us were cooked. Like I was fried. I was just like, we did still had good revenue, but like not really anything left over to show for it. And I'm like, I mean, it's great that we all paid our wages or whatever, but surely there's got to be a better way to make money, I guess. So, I think we've rectified a lot of those issues. I can talk to some of that, but part of the strategy then as well was for Ignite was to have a commercial property in our SMSF and essentially pay the SMSF rent. So that kind of got me down the property journey commercially and thinking about that. But then ultimately with COVID on and that changed those plans. So the commercial property for us got parked, but I still kind of had that bug. And I guess as a historical investment journey, I've never been that great at it. I followed, I kind of dabbled in specy stocks and things like that and lost my life savings, which like wasn't heaps, but it's significant when it is like all you've got.
Yeah.
So I had to start again there. So eventually I was like speckies are a bit of a rush, aren't they? When you like put like $1,000 in and the next day it's 2,000, you're like, what? And then one day you'll be like, oh, I had 3,000 and now it's $500.
Yeah.
And then a week later it's in administration and like you've lost the lot. So I didn't have any luck with them. I don't think that many people do. Like Warren Buffett says that like nobody makes speckies money on speckies long term. So anyway, so that was that. Meanwhile, my brother and I went halves on like a townhouse / apartment thing like 15 to 20 years ago or something like that. So chipped in half each and lived together for a few years to get into...
Is that right in Collingwood?
Abbotsford, yeah. Yep. At the time, Abbotsford was definitely not a trendy place. There was no shops, no culture. It was like a poor Richmond or something like that. But it's all we could afford, and we got on the ladder. And ultimately, I think looking back, that was just one of the best things to do, just having property, because it was forced savings. Like I didn't know it at the time, but it got rid of some of that extra cash that I had, which probably would have been wasted in those years of my life. To pay for the roof over my head. And it kind of just got to the point where 10 years later, you're like, oh, you know, the property's gone up, and like, you know, I've just kind of been living here as well. And like, so I guess we kind of experience the benefit of that. With the SMSF commercial property off the table, and like this experience with property and I guess love of property, because it, you know, I guess to this point anyway, property in Australia has been super strong. I think, you know, really looking back, it's always been strong if you kind of have a long enough outlook. We sold Abbotsford at one point and moved into a family home, my wife and I, for a bit more space out in Preston. But ultimately then had all this equity in the home, and learning more about it, listening to your podcast, reading books.
Number two podcast.
Decided that was the other kind of instigator, I guess. It was like this pain point of like, you know, I was all in, I still am all in on the business, but my sole focus was on the business and scaling to maybe exit in 10 years time or whatever it was going to be, you know, like that was 100% of the energy. And yeah, and if that dream wasn't being realized or went off track, it was, yeah, it was just especially stressful because everything hinged on it. And so now we, yeah, that was one thing. I'm like, we've essentially cooked a team of 15 people. Everyone's fried. We've got nothing to show for it. There's got to be a better way to make money, like I said. So that was then, okay, property's it. And that was the instigator to pull equity out of our home and just go all in on the property market. And so, yeah, I did that and managed to snap up a few investment properties around Australia. Yeah, around about 2021 or so, when it kind of like I could see like there was a light at the end of the tunnel post pandemic. And ultimately, the great thing about that is, well, you know, like there's so many great things about property. That's a whole another conversation. But now that move in itself has essentially like replaced my partner and my income in capital gains. So I get to do business because I love it, I guess, now.
Yeah, so it's taken the pressure off.
Yeah, it's taken that pressure off of like this is everything. It's like now I get to just do it because I love it and know that that stuff is taken care of. And like, yeah, like, you know, that being said, it's like been a long journey. That's I'm talking 20 years ago, yeah, going halves in something with my brother. So for anyone that thinks like
it's 25 years ago 25. When we had that conversation on the street, I've seen your journey, man. Yeah, it's crazy. And it wasn't that lot, that's what we were talking about, that bucks where you were still trying to figure it out. Matty Langers's bucks, shout out Matty, like that wasn't that long ago. Do you know what I mean? That's 7 years ago. You're 15 years into your journey and you're still trying to figure it out. You know? So that's a lesson to everyone. It's like a 25-year overnight success. So you just got to keep showing up, keep pivoting, and eventually you'll get there, right?
This guy sounds like it could be a little case study for you and your second most popular
podcast. Yeah, you are sitting next to the most...
I know.
You're the king of property in Australia, right?
Yeah, I know.
I was pretty quiet over there, guru.
Oh, you didn't know he was going to be on.
Not until yesterday. And I was like, I was pumped. I'm like, oh, now I've got to like share a little bit of that that story as well.
Well, he is. Man, there's a lot of people running around with a very similar story.
Mm. So tell me, what did you see in the market that gave you that confidence to actually go? Because you bought several, didn't you, during that time? Are you at liberty to say how many?
So I bought two, or, you know, my wife and I bought, the family bought, you know, two in Brisbane, like in the city, two in Perth in the city, and two in regional New South Wales. So went regional New South Wales because we already had a couple of the capital cities. Adelaide was on the radar, but at that point, I think,
Well, kind of nice. There's a couple of principles there about being a borderless investor, which is great. You were chasing where the markets were going. But at the time of that you bought, it was the analogy that we were using at the time, you might remember, was it's like having a car that's being fully fueled at the back with all the stimulus going into the market. And all it needed was a driver, and it was redlining at some point because they're revving. But it wasn't necessarily that easy to actually take that leap, given that we're in the shadows of something event that some people never thought would happen. And so what's the end game for you then? Because I think it's a great story that you've got this successful business that you're de-risking by parking it into another asset. So then you've got two, you've got a bit of diversification within backing your own skill set and backing your business that you've been doing for some time, but also parking it in bricks and mortar as well. So what's the end game for that? Are you holding it for a multi-decade play?
Building it?
Yeah. I mean, I guess like firstly, the confidence to get started was education for sure. Like again, the podcast, yours, others, books, like understanding all the data around, you know, long-term, what property does long term in terms of compounding gains and capital growth. And yes, it's an understanding that it's going to go down and it's going to go up, but if you hold for long enough, you're kind of ultimately heading in one direction. So that is confidence in itself for me, because it was always a long-term play. You know, if we go back to the speccies, like, you know, I don't have time to like research every single silly little company that and figure out whether this is a win or isn't, or is it going to be broken a week. Like, I definitely like set and forget stuff because I don't need anything else like on my mental load. So prior to properties, I was in ETFs, but a really big driver for me there was, let's say you've got 100k in ETFs and like in 7 years it's probably going to be worth about 200k or whatever it is, but if you were to use that 100 on a 500k property in 10 years, that might be worth $1 million. So just through that leverage, you're just having the most incredible gains. So understanding more about leverage, I think, was a really big driver. I'm like, I'm gonna be waiting a long time to get returns with ETFs. Like, I like that they're totally passive,
yeah,
but
and
property
pretty safe as yeah, well. Yeah,
and that you can insure against so much with property. You can insure if it burns down. You can't do that with speccies. And, you know, you can insure if you don't get paid rent and like all these things. Like, and the banks love it. Like, you can't borrow against shares as well as you can on property. So yeah, and I didn't know all of this stuff until I started learning about it. So that was the confidence. And yeah, the long-term play is to basically never sell, ideally, and keep just, you know, making them better and better and yeah, adding more.
Turning apples into apple pie like these boys do. But I think statistically, most people stop at one, right? 73% of all property investors stop at one. So you've just gone and gone whack, six.
Mm.
That's kind of unique, and it puts you into a very small company or group of people in this country that have done that. So you've gone from, I might do it, to the smallest niche of people that are doing it. Mm. So,
Bryce, what's the percentage that get to three or something? What's the, like, what, that's rare, 70, rare, isn't
73%
it?
Of one, 91% are one or two.
Yes.
So you got 9% for everything up to six plus.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is, six yeah. plus is super small, right?
Yeah.
So, but I guess the important thing for the people listening to this is, I can always tell the success of someone's property investment journey by the language they use around time horizon. Because if they start to make these investments with a month or a yearly sort of time horizon aspect, I think, oh, we'll see how they go. But most people who say, oh, I'll just check in on it in a decade, or I'll go and see what that's going to do after two decades, that is a very good clue as to how they will go. Because a good friend of mine wrote a book called Mind Over Money. His name's Evan Lucas. He's got this he's got this chapter which talks about scary ugly, and I love it. And it relates to shares, but it says textbook. Someone said, you said, you know, the property you buy it for 500 in 10 years time be worth $1 million. Well, when you put that in a book, the graph from it going from 500 to $1 million has this beautiful sort of exponential curve. But the reality is it goes like that and goes like that. So it starts and ends at the same point, but it's scary ugly along the way.
Mm.
His reference is to shares because the volatility in that. But mm-hmm. I say that for people with property as well, because people go into it thinking, oh, so if it's going to go up, you know, 7% every year, that means that I'll get this sort of... No, sometimes it'll go sideways and do nothing, and you'll get into the messy middle where you think, is anything actually going to happen here?
Mm.
And all of a sudden, over a period of 2 years, you'll get 80% of its growth. So it's kind of just understanding that if you can increase the time horizon, whether it's property, whether it's shares, whether it's crypto, whether it's art, whether it's whatever you're interested in, the longer your time horizon, the better chance you are likely to be successful in that asset, just because all that stuff will just iron itself out along the journey.
Yep.
Love it. So well done, Ant. Well done on the investment front. You have a proud guru over there that's happy that
you'll be on the property cast, the summer series.
Summer series, mate. Success stories. Hey, Ant, we do random reels, and they're a bit of an instant sort of reaction type play. Mm-hmm. I was going to call them Lino's random reels for a bit because she's in the chair, so I was going to do that. But yeah, Lino's going to bring them up, and we're going to give a reaction.
The Lean Machine.
Now, this is the bit where you're meant to give Lino 2 minutes notice.
I thought about that exactly as I dropped it on her.
And then she ran up and said, you're about 1:58 short on that.
About 2 minutes, 2 seconds short on that.
Yeah.
At the Harvard Business School, They came to this conclusion a few years ago that in the 21st century, all selling would be relationship selling. All success in business will be based on relationships. Your very best customers, I can tell you, are the people that you like and the ones who like you. 85% of your recommendations and referrals will come from people who like you and people who feel good about you. So focus on the relationship and the sale will take care of itself.
Ooh, love that one, Leno. Well done.
Sounds like the odd fall in love with the process and the dream will take care of itself at the end.
But yeah, it's definitely a real one. What do we think, boys? We sort of, you know, we're all business guys. We're all in the game of sales. No doubt if you can create a relationship with someone and build something deeper than, you know, than just a number scenario and someone buys into you, no doubt it's easier to make sure you're doing business into the future. What are your thoughts there, Ant?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, maybe that comes back to one of the large or the bigger mistakes that we've made over our time has been working with clients or customers that aren't the right fit. Mm-hmm. Has massive impact on the team, the culture, the morale, everything. Like the impact is so much greater than whatever the revenue they brought in is. So on the flip side, when you work with amazing customers that are the right fit that you'd love to go out and like have a drink with, or in my case, I've got a really good current client that I go for runs with, like these kind of clients that you actually want to spend time with and they want to spend time with you, they're always the best relationships. Like business comes naturally and they become your biggest promoters as they maybe bounce from organization to organization. So yeah, absolutely.
Have I noticed on your website, because I've always followed you obviously, your communication around the kind of clients that you want is getting more concise on the language on your website. Would that be fair to say?
Definitely.
But yeah, used to just do websites and then used to do commercial sort of websites, I suppose, and now they're staying at like the specific.
That's it, yeah. So now we're really clear in that we focus on website design and development for mission-driven organizations in the education space, renewable energy, and not-for-profits. So we're already just so much more specific. And another mistake was maybe as you grow, trying to do everything for everyone and you end up doing nothing. So yeah, that's been a really big learning. And now people come to you that they know they're the right fit. And instead of having to like vet leads and figure that out, they already come pre-educated on like who you work with, what your budgets are, you know, what a typical ongoing retainer might look like. So it just comes much more easily, reduces our workload. Yeah, it means that we're getting the right kind of customers.
Nice. Hit the next one, Leno.
One day in the gym is basically imperceivable. 2 days in the gym, you don't recognize any change whatsoever. 100 days in the gym, and you're almost a new person. So we let these things slip. Because it takes so long to see the progress, we let them slip. And when we don't do them, it becomes 0 times 100 or 0 times 1,000. And that nets out to a zero. When you do anything, it adds up. When you do nothing, it amounts to zero. So take the small steps every day. Do what you're supposed to do. And don't expect some incredible results in 1 day or 2 days or 10 days. Worthwhile things take 100 days. So put in the daily effort. Let that be your reward.
Jocko, eh? How good. What are our thoughts on that, boys? Like, we're obviously, you know, we're all sitting here, you know, we're doing something. Obviously, we're putting one foot in front of the other in some way, shape, or form without expecting amazing results. But what's our thoughts on that? What do you think?
I reckon that's right up your alley. That's on the action in the pricey boy. We're looking at you.
Looking at you, Guru.
I think that we had James Clear on our podcast who wrote the book
Atomic Habits, man, which is epic. He just did a masterclass on, you know, that website Masterclass.
Yeah. Did he do a masterclass? I just finished that book. Amazing.
I just did that with my daughter.
Incredible. So I think it's not too dissimilar to what we were talking about with the property. It's a time horizon game.
Mm.
So for a lot of people, they want to do something and get a reward too early in the game. So I think the Jocko was just talking about something different to property, but the same concept. Mm. If he's saying if your time horizon is 100 days, you will actually you'll actually receive the benefit that you're trying to do. Your time horizon is 3 days. You're not going to... I think that's a beautiful metaphor for overlay that with property, overlay that with running a business, overlay that with anything else. If you...
It's a long-term play.
If you've got to sacrifice local benefit for a long-term play. So people know they shouldn't eat the piece of cake, but they do, but they're because they're not focused on the fact of what the cake will do for them in 100 days. So I think it's another way of saying what James Clear said very well in Atomic Habits, which is just compounding. We talk about compounding interest. Mm. We talk about compounding returns in property. Mm. Compounding habits are the same thing.
Yeah. You could probably get a really good visual of it. They should teach this in school too. Like one of the best things to do, I reckon, is or that I recommend for people is to Google compound interest calculator and go to one of those sites and just look at what it looks like if you start with $1,000 and chip in $10 or $20 a week over a 30-year horizon and get that visual, because that's just so motivating. And I guess you could apply that then to your habits or something like that. It's like you're starting down here. This is where you're going to be if you just show up every day.
It's like saying, do you want $1 million today or do you want 1 cent that doubles every day for 30 days?
Yes.
That's a funny one.
That's good. Yeah.
I didn't think that.
I haven't done the math. I'm assuming that it's not what I think.
it wasn't what I thought.
No, it's. I'm pretty good at maths too. You would choose the 1 cent exponentially.
For me, I'm a pretty simple guy. I'm like, that's to me is just turning up, right? So you fall in love with the process and the dream will take care of itself. So you just keep showing up without expectation and eventually you get there.
Expectations.
If you go, yeah,
just ruined you. Let's do another one, Leno. That was good. Bit of wisdom from the boys.
Show me how long it takes you to order at a counter and I will show you your bank account. I think the longer people take in, this happened to me the other day and I about lost my mind, but I was at a counter like one does, a coffee shop or something. And there's always a lady in front of you, right? And the lady in front of you takes 4 centuries to order a coffee and a muffin. And what I realized very quickly is, you know, if you want to get something done, you give it to a busy person, is the saying. And I think often that's why they say you should take somebody to dinner before you hire them, or take them out to lunch, see how they treat the staff. But I also think, see how quickly they make decisions, because people who take forever to order when they stand in line, one, are really comfortable inconveniencing somebody else around them, which means they have limited self-awareness, maybe borderline narcissism. And then simultaneously, they're not very efficient at the things that don't really matter. That coffee order does not really matter. And so if we know we are here for a finite amount of time, why spend so much time on that as opposed to a walk, a sunset, etc.?
That's a deep thinker, that one.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just being organized and getting shit done, isn't it? What happens when you roll up in the Macca's drive-thru, Benny? Is it whackety-whack or are you sitting there sort of scrolling through?
Nah, it's too... They go, welcome back, Ben.
Yeah, same again. Hit it.
Same again. Yeah, no, true. But it's a good point though, right? If someone, I think the self-awareness one, I can't remember who it was, it's a podcast, the KX Pilates guy, like talking about like being self-aware in business is pretty important, I reckon, for a lot of reasons.
Mm. Yeah, like it, boys. So anything on that one, gents?
I think Ramit Sethi wrote a book, which is I'll Teach You to Be Rich. He's an American, he's got a Netflix series, it's a New York Times bestseller, and he says most people fuss on the $3 decisions and they don't spend enough time on the $30,000 decisions. And I think that's symptomatic of let's have a committee meeting with 10 people and you've got to make $1 million decision, a $30,000 decision, a $3,000 decision, and what coffee we're going to choose. We will spend half the meeting over the coffee that we're going to choose, and probably the $1 million decision will blow our minds and we'll probably go, oh, it's a bit out of our pay grade. So I think what I took away from that at 30,000 feet is if you can't get dialed down on the small stuff, you're not having the perspective on that stuff doesn't actually matter. We need to be talking about where we're going to send our kids to school. What should we be investing our money in? Like some of this stuff that really matters, rather than do I want a muffin that's chocolate or do I want a muffin that's apple? And it's okay to have some form of indecision, but not when you're at the front of the line.
Mm. Yeah. I think like maybe you learn this in like if you're running your own business, the more you kind of maybe chit-chat to every supplier that you might have to meet with through the day, you realize that you're just not going to get anything done. So I do feel like I really appreciate just clear and to the point calls and communication now. So I've kind of learned that, I guess, over time through, you know, not getting enough done if you do chit-chat about that stuff. But yeah, you want time to like take off early or get back to your family or those bigger things that you want to be spending time on. So yeah.
Can I ask you a question here? This is more for me. So how do you balance, as the leader, right, and, you know, when you had 14 or when you've got your team and you go into the office, do you find that you get pulled in a lot of directions and it's hard for you to settle into what it is you're, you know, might be on your list to get through that day? Is that something that you've struggled with in business? Because I know me personally, that's one of my biggest challenges. I like to dial into what I'm doing. So when I come into the office, you know, obviously it's your business and you're trying to bring people along for the role, be there and support your team or whatever.
Mm.
Do you find, is that a challenge that you sort of...
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
And how have you sort of... Because I've got a business partner, right? So mm-hmm. I've got two business partners. So have you, Bryce. So we can divide and conquer somewhat.
Mm.
You're one out. How do you get what you need to get done, but also be there for your team when they're pulling you in random directions at random points of the day, when you least need it?
Well, we've got a GM now, so shout out to Andrew, our GM.
Go, Andy.
So yeah, he takes a big load of the day-to-day kind of stuff off my plate, but still when I'm in the office and we're in the office, we still you know, and it's great like being there to support people, but yeah, you do get pinged the whole day and it's hard to get in that flow, which is really I find it really drains me if I get in flow and then I get pulled out of flow, and so yeah, I find that I do my best work between like 5 a.m and 9 a.m
because you're creative and you can immerse yourself in it, and then you're not getting, because when you're being creative, which is something I think I've spoken to you about, PK, because sometimes you can feel like you're not being productive, right?
Mm.
Because when you're being creative, it's not actually doing, you need to put yourself in that mindset to open your mind up to figure out which direction you're going to go or what decision you're going to make. Interesting, because I'm lucky because I've got Pete, and Pete, you know, Pete shields me from that, and I can sometimes go and hide. That's why my office is up here. I can go and hide and be able to do that. So
yeah,
it's
are you inclined to pull all nighters as well?
I love all nighters. Yeah, I do my I love them. Always have, man. Yeah, always have. And that started back like when we were talking, when I was working full time as a tradie and stuff. The only time I could work was through the night, right? So I'd work through the night. But yeah, absolutely. And Pete will tell you like that we have a joke. I work in the laundry at home all the time, because I like it, because I can just dial in and get it done. And like you said, it is exhausting when you've got a list you're trying to get through and you're getting pinged throughout the day randomly, and then you've got to try and get back into your slipstream again.
It's like the analogy in that book you talked about before with E Myth. Remember, he talks about the pies, and
he's
a great pie maker, and then he goes, but then when you run your own pie shop, you realize I'm not spending a lot of time making pies, which I was good at, because I'm running the business, keeping the lights on and finding customers and all that sort of stuff.
Totally. Yeah. So, got to do accounting, got to worry about new business now, all that stuff.
So that'd be challenging for you as a creative, right? Because you want to stay on the right side of the brain, but then it's pulling you back to the left. You know, you're in plot, and then you've got to realize, oh, there's a spot fire over there.
Yep.
Or whatever.
I've got to pay an invoice. Definitely. Or make sure the invoice.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It is. Yeah. So Andrew's a massive support for that. So
when did he come in?
It's about 3 years ago now. So yeah, that's and before him we had another person who really supported on that. Before we could have a GM, really just lent on the first employees. So the first, you know, even when we were like a few people, it was like they were the GMs that were like supporting with some of that stuff, if they could, that is. But yeah, ultimately the growing to like 10 people or whatever, those first few hires, maybe it's first five, is pretty brutal. Like, you know, there's no one to lean on. It's like, you know, you 24/7 to try and keep things afloat.
Awesome, man. Now, mate, this has been great. Before we wrap up, we've got our rapid fire five questions that I'll throw at you. Which do you prefer, UFC or AFL?
UFC by far. I actually don't follow AFL.
What's your go-to choice for a creative boost, music or podcast?
Creative boost.
You don't need to tell the truth and say number one's.
I think it's probably running, actually, with no music. I learned.
You don't run with music?
Well, I used to, and then I ran a few times without any podcast or music, and like you just kind of let your mind tick over, and it was amazing. So now I quite like to just go for a run with nothing and freedom, silence, yeah. And you know, with a couple of kids, silence is really big. But
looking at those shoes, I had a feeling he was a runner.
he is, and that hasn't always been. How long, Ant, do you think you... Because I've noticed, you know, started to say, oh, Ant started running. Mm. Oh, he's taking that pretty serious. Because you're doing, like, ultras.
I guess there's a bit of a theme here, yeah. When I don't do things in halves.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so took up running, and actually it would have been listening to a podcast. I think it was the David Goggins and Joe Rogan podcast.
Yep.
And his journey, which is absolutely insane. But
he's a savage.
Yeah, but he ran like a marathon distance when he was 200 kilos or something like that, and absolutely injured himself and was bleeding everywhere by the finish. But I was like, what's my excuse? You know, like it was just such a motivating story on so many levels. So yeah, that was part of the reason why I decided to escalate to a marathon, and then got really into it. Like everything about it, the mental challenge, it's so much more mental than I initially realized.
Agreed.
And yeah, the just what you learn about your body and endurance and the resilience it builds and grit, like there's just so many benefits. So yeah, that's been something I've gotten right into. So currently I've done a marathon in every state in Australia, but NT is my last one to do, which is next year.
Be nice and warm up there, brother.
Yeah, yep.
All right, next one. What do you find more rewarding, solo projects, or are you more of a team collaboration?
Definitely team collaboration, yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, there's nothing better than coming together as a team to build a project.
Love it, mate. What's your ideal way to unwind? Reading a book or watching a movie?
It would be watching a movie, I guess, but I really don't have much time to do that these days. Got my youngest son is 2, so I feel like my wife and I just pass out at about 9 o'clock, and that's about the end of it. But yeah, maybe when I used to have some time to myself, a movie.
Nice. What's this one? Who do you trust more to make ethical decisions, AI or humans?
That's interesting, because look, I would probably go with AI, assuming the right context and prompt, because humans have so many biases, and you know,
that's an interesting question. I was like, what a question.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you. Yeah. Because I knew you were AI.
And humans can be.
And I didn't know the freaking answer. So I like that answer, because I didn't know what the answer is going to be, but that's a good answer. As long as the prompt's right, like there's no bias, there's emotion.
There's like there's supposedly some bias in the AIs, but just like people overblow the whole like hallucination of AI. It's like, I love this quote. It's like, everyone's worried about AI hallucinating, but humans make shit up all the time. And it's so true. Like, we're so biased. We're so, like, you know, up in our own head. We, like, you know, make stuff up. We, like, have egos, and like all that stuff is, you know, just reduced with AI. So I would trust AI with that for sure.
Right, there we go. All right, boys, we're going to wrap it up. Ant, this has been good, mate, and all the best. Working on some really good stuff. Stay on the property journey. We'll let you guys connect offset, and
we'll link to Ignite.
You can help the guru.
Ignite online, downline. And I know the people interested in the AI stuff, you're active on LinkedIn. Prolific, some might say, on LinkedIn as a bit of a thought leader on there. So get on and check. Look, Anthony Wymond on LinkedIn.
Thanks, guys.
Is that you on LinkedIn, or is that AI?
a great way to close.
Still me at the moment.
Thanks, Ant, mate. All the best.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Please, guys, like, share, subscribe. 2024, $1 going for a follow and a subscription to help cure this ridiculous skin condition that is in our most vulnerable, our children.
Epidermolysis bullosa. Bullosa?
Bang. See you at the top.
People want to be part of a winning team.
People can find a better version of themselves
if they choose.
You just need to go start some shit.
Action is all that matters.
Be a man of your word.
I think I look back now and I'm like, whoa, that took some guts.
Be kind. Be kind. Be kind.
See you at the top. New episode every Wednesday.